and welcome to Effective Parenting. In just a moment, you're going to hear a conference presented live in Lawrenceville, New Jersey. The title of the conference is How to Raise the Child Who is Difficult to Parent. Dr. Scott Taransky and Joanne Miller are authors and counselors, and this series of talks focuses on some of the more difficult problems parents face. Let's join the conference in progress now as Dr. Taransky introduces this first session.
Anyone who's shopped for anything knows that the choices come in a variety of shapes and colors and sizes and varieties. Just recently, my wife and I purchased some living room furniture. First, we had to decide, do we want a love seat and a couch, or do we want a couch and do we want some recliners, or a recliner, or a love seat and a recliner, and how are we going to fit it all in? And once we decided that, do we want one that pulls out to be a bed, or do we want, and what kind of colors do we want, what kind of material, we had so many choices to make. Well, nowhere are the choices more clear, a variety so great, than people. People are so different. They come with packaged with their own unique set of strengths and weaknesses.
Anyone who's ever worked with children realizes that some children are more difficult to parent than others. The reasons for these differences vary greatly, and furthermore, the solutions to the problems seem to be all over the map. But as we've counseled with families, with parents, with children, we've worked with children, we've developed some secrets that can help even the most difficult child, some things that you can put into practice in your family to help things run more smoothly and help that child to develop the things they need in their life.
We know that some of you know that your children have attention deficit because they've been tested. Others of you know they have it, but have never been tested. Some of you are wondering if they have some kind of a problem like that. And others are coming, you know your children really, the child doesn't have attention deficit, but they have some other challenging issues. We're going to try to speak to some of those things. I've spent some time working on this both in my own family as well as with a number of other people. And there's going to be some times when you're going to benefit, especially from Joanne. This is Joanne Miller. You're going to benefit from her medical expertise as she tries to explain some of the biological things that are going on in children with attention deficit.
Scott has been a pastor for many years and has worked with families, counseling with them and teaching them. And he has a particular burden for children who are a challenge to parent because he knows that there are answers out there and that often parents have a hard time with their children. But Scott has seen things that work in those families, and so he has a particular burden for those children and those families, helping them work together to be successful.
Also, you're going to hear from our son Josh, and my wife Carrie's in the back there, and Josh is going to be speaking today. Josh has attention deficit and has worked through a number of the struggles related to that. He's very open and transparent about the struggles he's been through, so you'll have an opportunity to talk to him if you'd like, ask him some questions. But he's developed a particular burden for some of the ways that parents interact with their children as he's watched and seen different things happen. And he'll be sharing some important things for you that I think will be motivational for you in just a little bit. We're going to share with you a rather comprehensive plan that has a lot of parts and ideas, and we've given you notes so you can take notes in the course of that. But I just want to tell you, if your mind starts to wander as we start to talk at different points, go ahead and let it wander. I mean, the most important thing isn't for you to get everything we're saying to you. The most important thing is for you to think about your family. You're going to donate 3 hours of your life today to thinking about your family, planning, thinking about a particular child, maybe a couple of children. And if your mind wanders off into some kind of a plan or idea or strategy, let it go and start jotting things down on the other side of the page, and we think that's fine. We're going to start by describing some children to you. See if you can relate to any of these children. Maybe you know some of them. Maybe they even live in your house. First, we'll have a child we'll call the dreamer. This child seems to have a hard time concentrating on any one thing for even a short period of time. This child has a hard time remembering where he's at any given time, and if you tell him to go to do something, he'll often forget, get distracted easily, and won't be able to complete the task. For example, mom says to the dreamer, I want you to go get on your shoes because we're going to the store. Go into your room and get on your shoes. A few minutes later, he's gone. Haven't heard from him, back from him. Go into the room, find him. There he is sitting on the floor playing with toys. No shoes anywhere around. What happened? Oh, I forgot. this kind of a child we'll call the dreamer, because this child's very distracted. When working on schoolwork, this child will easily find themselves distracted by almost anything. And in fact, they'll pick up their pencil and they'll think of 101 things they can do with their pencil, things you wouldn't even have imagined before.
So that child is the dreamer. Now maybe you've met another child we'll call the energizer rabbit. Now this child comes factory equipped with more energy than you could imagine. This child just darts from one thing to the next. This child is restless. She can't sit still. She can't stay in one place for very long at all. She doesn't walk from one place to the next. So she runs, she jumps. She has all this energy she doesn't know what to do with. She talks continually. You wish there was an off button on this child. You just don't know what to do with all the energy that's going on there. The projects are getting started, but things are left undone. She's just darting from one thing to the next. That's the energizer rabbit.
The third child we'll call the volcano. We call this child the volcano because emotions are very dominant in this child's life, and there's not a lot of control of those emotions. Anger is dominant and reveals itself in a number of hurtful behaviors. Meanness, disrespect, even violence at times, dramatics. Now, anger isn't the only emotion that this child often experiences. They may get carried away just with excitement. So if you start playing rough with this child, then they start doing things that are out of the bounds of what's right. They start taking extraordinary risks. And so you have a hard time even playing with this child and getting them excited because their emotions get out of control. Fear is another emotion that can be dominant in these children's lives. And so parenting these children, the volcano, is like walking on eggshells because you're always afraid of what's going to happen, how they might erupt next.
The fourth child we want to introduce you to is Mr. Whoops. Now, Mr. Whoops is characterized by impulsiveness. Mr. Whoops blurts out answers even before the question's asked. He interrupts. He's just always there with action. In fact, his hands seem to act before he thinks. His hands, his feet, his mind, his voice, the things he says, they bypass his brain. Because if he would think before he act, he wouldn't do the things he's doing. Often, Mr. Whoops gets involved in reckless behavior because he's just not thinking.
The dreamer, the energizer rabbit, the volcano, and Mr. Whoops all have unique personality characteristics. But all of those things are complicated often by the fact that these children don't know how to obey, how to show respect, or how to be kind. This creates a tremendous amount of frustration in a home, discord among family members, and these parents are often quite frustrated. The normal tasks of parenting, instructions of parenting, don't seem to work with these children. These parents become exasperated, and their anger contributes to the difficulties that exist in the home. Parents often say to themselves, "This isn't the way parenting is supposed to be. I never imagined it would be this way." The children who are like these children often suffer from two other problems. One is friction in relationships. Whether it's friendships that they develop or with parents or other people, there's conflict in the relationships that they experience continually. Another problem they deal with is self-esteem. And because of the continual correction, the continual need for rebuke that these children experience, they often feel guilty and repressed in their self-esteem.
We're going to offer you a number of helpful suggestions today for dealing with these children. I'm going to break down the process into manageable steps for you so you can understand what's going on in you and also in the child. We find that often parents who have a child who's a challenge to parent, these parents begin to feel bad about themselves. They feel like, well, if I would just do the right thing, my child wouldn't be this way. We wouldn't have these problems. And now, to a certain extent, that's true. There are things that we can do as parents to influence and affect our children. But our children are not robots. They have a response back to us. They have a responsibility to respond to the things that we're doing. So there's responsibility on both parts. What we want to do is to help you see ways in which you can influence your children so that they can respond in a helpful way, so they can grow in the areas they need to grow in. So what we're going to do is share with you a variety of resources that you can use to influence your children to help them make the changes that they need to make.
One family that we help, the mother wrote us a letter which says, "Dear Scott and Joanne, I'm using some of your techniques as we work on things at our house. My 9-year-old has a learning disability that complicates my parenting and adds to my frustration level. So far, all your suggestions have been workable for her and in line with the recommendations her psychologist has made. The above fact has been such a relief. Many of the usual parenting recommendations have been frustrating for us. Sometimes it seemed like nothing worked and my child was not, quote, normal. I'll try to communicate with you occasionally as to how successful your secrets are with my learning disabled child. I'm sure that that will be of interest to you. Signed, Sue.
We've been honing down ideas for this talk for several years now because we believe we found some solutions to the problems that actually work. And so we enjoy pursuing that some more, understanding what's going on, and then communicating that to parents. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at some of the causes of these difficult behaviors, and then we're going to focus on some solutions that you can put into practice in your family. Now, some of the children that we've talked about may have what's commonly called ADD or ADHD. Those refer to attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. These are titles that are commonly used nowadays with children. Now, you may or may not like these titles, but really the title itself is not what's important. The title, you may grab onto that and say, yeah, this is really helpful, but it may not be. But as far as we're concerned, the treatment we're suggesting is not dependent on a title or not having a title. We believe that if you see the symptoms that we're going to talk about in your children, in your family, that the solutions we're going to offer you will be helpful, whether this child has the title or not. So we're going to go through a brief discussion now of what ADD is, exactly what's happening within the child, and then we're going to move on to some helpful suggestions of how to deal with that. And those suggestions will be helpful for you whether your child is titled with the ADD or not.
If your child is difficult to parent, don't just assume that your child has attention deficit disorder. Your child may have another problem that may be less popular or publicized. Attention deficit gets a lot of press, and so it gets blamed for a lot of the challenges that parents face. We want to spend a few minutes talking about attention deficit and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. If your child doesn't fit into that category, the discussion we're going to have is going to be very helpful for you anyway, because we're going to take apart the whole idea of how children behave and what causes them to behave, and you'll learn some important things about your children, whether they have attention deficit or not. Now, as we talk about attention, ADD and ADHD, we're going to talk about three things. One, we're going to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of classification. We're going to talk about a biological analysis of what's going on with these children. And we're also going to talk about medications, advantages and disadvantages. We want you to know the facts about these things, and we want you to know where the facts stop and theories begin.
So let's start with the process of classification. And we believe there are advantages and there are disadvantages to classification. The advantages include things like, well, sometimes parents just want to know why they're having this problem. There's an advantage to putting a name to it, saying, if my child is classified as ADD, at least I know why we're struggling. And that can help the parent to feel a little bit better about what's going on because they have a name for it. That can be an advantage. Also, the children can have certain advantages out there from the medical community or scholastically, benefits to the child if they're carrying that title. So that can be a benefit also. But as with anything, there are also disadvantages to classification. Sometimes a child will excuse his own behavior because he's carrying that title. He says, well, I can't help it. I'm just hyper. I have ADD. And so he stops working on some of his behavior problems because he's just kind of writing it off. Now, sometimes parents will do the same thing. They'll excuse their child and say, well, my child's not the problem. It's ADD. That's the problem. And so the parent kind of backs off on some of those parenting strategies that they should be implementing. So that can be a disadvantage also of using a classification, because sometimes a child then gets labeled as a certain thing and they stop working. They stop trying to improve. They figure, well, this is just the way I am. There's nothing I can do about it. They carry that label throughout life and they stop trying to work and improve on their struggles.
What classifies a child as ADD or ADHD? There are actually professional tests that are given to children. These are behavioral tests. They're not blood tests, which, when administered by medical professionals, allow the child to be examined in a way that can classify them. So those who are trained professionals may administer a number of tests to children, including behavior, rating scales, extensive interviews, and the use of performance tests, which measure impulse control and attentiveness. You'll find, though, that many children who are classified today with ADD or ADHD have never been through that kind of test for it. The fact of the matter is, these tests are subjective tests. We're dealing with behavior and observing it. But if you have someone who's a trained medical professional, they are looking for the certain core symptoms of what's going on with that child. It's important to realize that ADD can't be diagnosed with a blood test and it can't be cured with a pill.
Furthermore, the behaviors that are demonstrated by a child with ADD are also present in other children. Some, if not all children, have the same behaviors, just to a different degree. And it's been said that all five-year-olds have ADD. Well, it's because they're acting the way that an ADD child would. So what's the difference here then? I think we all recognize that we have impulses, that we have to learn to control. We have to learn to put the brakes on, to curb our impulses. The problem is with this ADD child is that they're less able to do that. They're not learning to do it the same way another child might. So we can recognize that all children are impulsive sometimes. All children daydream and are forgetful sometimes. All children are fidgety and restless sometimes. The difference is, when did these behaviors stray from the normal and become abnormal has to do with how often they are. With the ADD child, these behaviors are the norm rather than the exception. From our perspective, we don't see classification as necessary. We don't have to know whether the child actually has ADD or not. The treatment that we suggest to parents will be helpful to any child, whether they're particularly an ADD, ADHD child or not. We're going to suggest some treatment that will help with any child. If you're seeing these symptoms, this treatment will be helpful in your family. So we can put classification aside for a few minutes. We don't actually classify children, but we suggest a treatment plan that will help with children who have these symptoms, no matter what the cause is.
We work with attention deficit kids, and we work with children who are not attention deficit, who are just a challenge to parent, and we recognize that many of the solutions fall into the same category for both of these kinds of children. ADD and ADHD can be imitated by a number of other problems. Thyroid problems, hearing impairment, visual perceptual problems can imitate the symptoms of attention deficit disorder. Furthermore, the child who has a disability or is slow in learning how to read can have a hard time and also demonstrate some of the symptoms. The child who is often emotionally out of control can also demonstrate some of the symptoms. So certainly if there are medical issues, medical problems that need to be addressed, we want to address them. But we don't want to just assume that that's the case. There are a number of other ways that we can work with children. And we want to help your children to work with the challenges that they're experiencing themselves. We believe that these children can grow. And the growth that they do means minimizing some of the weaknesses that they have so that their strengths can shine through.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and rewind to the beginning of side two to continue this conference. Controversy has surrounded the issue of attention deficit disorder. Many studies have been done concerning medications, diagnosis, and treatment of ADD. Conflicting reports sometimes add confusion to an already frustrating parenting problem. Joanne now continues the conference using her medical background to sort out some of the biological issues affecting behavior. She will give you a clearer picture of what is actually happening in your child's brain.
So let's just take a minute to focus on ADD, just to look at that particular problem for a minute. Volumes of work have been done on this particular disorder, and it reveals that there are actually some biological causes for the behaviors that we see in our children. There's actually a decreased amount of a specific neurotransmitter that goes on in the brain that this neurotransmitter helps to regulate behavior. And these children who actually are diagnosed with ADD have a lesser amount of this neurotransmitter. Now,
what happens then is that the pathways in the brain don't, the things don't run as smoothly. The impulses don't run as smoothly. The wires, if the wires are clear and working well, you're going to see a different response in the child than if they're experiencing a short or interference. Now, one interesting study that was done on adults who have ADD and compared to adults who don't have ADD. And they were given a specific task to do. And then the amount of glucose in their brain was monitored. Now, glucose is the fuel. It's the energy source for the activity that's going on. And with the adults who had ADD, when they were doing this particular test that they were supposed to be doing, they actually used up less glucose than the adults who don't have ADD. And what this indicated was that there's actually less brain activity going on with the ADD individual than the other people who were involved in the test. So that was an interesting study showing actually what's going on here in the brain and how much activity there really is.
So let's look at the Energizer rabbit. Remember him? The one who's just going and going and going. Keep in mind, though, that this child has a lot of energy, and they want to do whatever, all these different things, but they have less brain activity to regulate that behavior. And consequently, with less brain activity to regulate the behavior, they do all kinds of things. They're just moving around, and they're having a hard time with those things. This is a child that wants to jump out of the car before the car stops. This is the child who bounds down the hall and may run into someone. This is the child who has a hard time. When Josh was younger, he was given a nickname, and that nickname was Tigger. Remember Tigger in Winnie the Pooh? Jumping and jumping and jumping. And he was kind of a hyperactive tiger in the Winnie the Pooh story.
So let's just take a minute to look at what's actually going on in the brain of a child who has ADD. Now, we're going to take a look at a couple nerve cells here. Now, there are different kinds of nerve cells in the brain. Some nerve cells have to do with activity. They tell the muscles what to do and make the child act. But there are other nerve cells that have to do with thinking and how the child thinks about what's going on. So a nerve cell, there's a cell part that looks kind of like a star shape. And then there's a branch that comes off the cell. It's a kind of a knob or nodule at the end. And then the other end of the nerve cell has straight branches coming out of it. Now, what happens with nerve impulses, as communication is happening within the brain, these nerve cells hook up one to the other. So the end part that has the knob on the end, that's called an axon. And this other end, where of the straight branches, is called dendrites. And the axon comes from one nerve cell. It comes up against the dendrite of the next nerve cell, and there's a chemical reaction goes on there. There's actually chemicals within the axon that are released. Now, the chemicals that are important with ADD, the chemicals that are important for regulating the behavior are dopamine and norepinephrine. Now, these chemicals are released from here, and they affect how that next nerve is going to respond. And remember, we're talking about nerves that involve thinking. So there might be a lot of stimulation coming in, but the child has to think about what's going on. And with a child with ADD, there is less dopamine and less norepinephrine. So there's less of an ability to think about what they're taking in, to kind of categorize the stimulation that's coming in. They have a lessened ability to regulate what's coming in, to focus on one thing instead of another, to think and to focus and to regulate their behavior.
So picture the dreamer. He's in the classroom, and the teacher is writing on the blackboard and speaking to the class. Yet over in the corner, there's a light that kind of flickers every once in a while. And then there's a clock on the other, and it's got a second hand that goes click, click, click. Then there's a radiator that offers a little bit of a hum over on the side. And then there's a garbage man outside the window who's come to unload a bunch of trash and dump that. And then there's Billy who's tapping his pencil. Now, the dreamer's having a hard time because he's having an inability to focus on exactly one thing. Most of us have the ability to put away the distractions and choose the thing we want to focus on and concentrate on it. The dreamer has a hard time with that. He can't focus. In fact, he tries to focus on all those things at the same time. That's because he has the activity going on in his brain is not as intense as the activity that's going on in a child who doesn't have ADD.
Now, there are times, even with non-ADD folks, where there's a decrease in this ability to transmit from one nerve cell to the next. Maybe the individual is tired or has taken alcohol or medication. You know, those medications that say on the package, don't operate machinery and you shouldn't drive a car because of drowsiness. What happens when these medications are within the body that they affect that chemical reaction that's going on in the thinking part of the brain, so we're not able to think as clearly? Now, one of the differences between attention deficit children is that their energy level is still high. So they've got a decreased ability to focus and to control their behavior, but they're still high in energy. So the dopamine release is decreased. They're not able to think and concentrate, but all the stimulation is still coming in. The part of the brain that's receiving the stimulation is doing fine, but the part of the brain that's trying to sort it through and organize it and decide what to respond to, that part has some impairment going on. So they're not able to focus as clearly as another child might. So this child is receiving all the stimulation at a normal rate that everybody else is receiving, but they're not able to regulate that. So they need some help. Often they'll miss those social cues that are going on. They'll miss what they're supposed to be focusing on because they're pulled from one thing to the next. Just whatever stimulation comes in, they're responding to because they're not able to regulate it within the brain.
Some have described attention deficit as being on a bicycle going down a hill and not having any brakes. You're just frantically trying to take in all the stimulus at the same time and react to it, and you just feel out of control. Just imagine Mr. Whoops for a minute. His friend picks up his book, and before even thinking, he grabs the book. Why does he do that? He's getting the stimulation so quickly, and the part of his brain that regulates his behavior is not as active, and so he ends up acting before he thinks. In essence, his hands seem to bypass his brain. It's why this child is the one who'll be walking down the hall and stick his foot out and trip his sister without even thinking. If he just stop and think about it, then he wouldn't do these things. And isn't that what we sometimes say to our children? If you just stop and think about it. Well, the hard thing is for them is that their brain isn't working as fast, and so they have to spend extra time thinking. It's not easy for them to just stop and think about it. They're receiving the stimulation faster than their ability to respond and regulate the stimulus that's coming.
So what's happening with this child is there's normal activity in the part of the brain that's acting, but there's a decreased activity in the part of the brain that's thinking. So you kind of get the idea of what's going on here. Now let's take a minute and talk about medication. Ritalin is the most commonly used medication for a child who's been diagnosed with ADD, or at least classified as ADD. What Ritalin does is it's a stimulant. It increases the effectiveness of neurotransmission in the brain. Ritalin actually mimics the dopamine. Remember, dopamine is one of the chemicals that's in a decreased amount with this child. So Ritalin is going to mimic that action that the dopamine ought to be doing. So the Ritalin will help the child to focus more effectively, to be more alert, to control those impulses. Now remember, though, that medication is not a cure. It's a tool. It can be helpful at the moment, but it doesn't cure the problem. It just stands in there and helps because there's not enough dopamine. But anytime a child, anybody who takes Ritalin, they're going to have an increase in the effectiveness of the brain. It works just the same for a person without ADD as it does for a person with ADD. What it does is it mimics the dopamine. It increases their ability to concentrate, to focus, to regulate their behavior. So the child may appear to be more relaxed then and not as anxious because they're able to regulate the stimulation that's coming in.
About 3 o'clock today, we're going to give you all a dose of Ritalin just to keep you awake.
Now, a common misuse of Ritalin is that a parent will go into the pediatrician and say, "My child is hyperactive. I'd like to put him on Ritalin." So the pediatrician says, "Okay, we'll give him some Ritalin and see if it works." Well, that is not a way to diagnose ADD because Ritalin is going to work on almost all children, if not all of them. It does the same thing. It's going to help that child to settle down a little bit and be able to focus, to control their impulses. So some might say, though, well, if it works on all children, why don't we put all children on Ritalin? And some people have actually entertained that idea. And so you may go into a classroom and you find that half the children are taking Ritalin. Does that mean that half the children have ADD? Well, no, it doesn't. All it means that half the children are more able to focus because they're taking a medication. So now let's just take a minute before we move on and talk about some advantages and disadvantages of medication. As we've said, medication can help a child to think more clearly and to focus more accurately. It's going to help reduce some of the social problems in the classroom. And that certainly, that's an advantage. That's a benefit. Also, the medication, if you give a child Ritalin, it may give them just a little bit of space to work on some other areas in their life. The ability to concentrate and focus so they can work on developing some social skills, so they can come to a point of maturity. And so that can be helpful for that child for a period of time. Now, there are disadvantages also to medication. As with anything, advantages, there are also disadvantages. One of the disadvantages with Ritalin is the realization that it's not a cure. It's a temporary solution. You can give your child some Ritalin, and that's great. It may help them for a little while, but as soon as that medication wears off, the old behaviors are back. The child needs to learn to regulate their behavior. They need to learn to compensate for the weaknesses, and they need to develop some specific skills to be successful in life. There are also side effects to medication, and I think any parent who is considering medication for their child needs to be aware of the side effects and how that's going to affect the child also. So if you're considering medication, it's helpful just to talk to your physician about that. I think every family needs to decide for themselves if that medication is helpful for that child or if it's not, and make a personal decision on that. It's not our purpose to recommend that people use medication. It's not our purpose to criticize people for using medication. We really believe that's a family choice that's up to you. The suggestions that we're offering, the solutions that we're offering, will be helpful for you whether your child takes the medication or not. We're looking for some more long-term improvement in the child, some training, some retraining of the child that will benefit them as they continue to grow. So we just believe that whether you use medication or not, medication is not enough. You're also going to need some other techniques to work with your child to help bring some maturity and growth in that child.
We're in a part of the workshop here where we're talking about causes of some of the problems that we see manifest in our children. Joanna spent some time here talking about biological causes, one of them being attention deficit and trying to understand some things that are going on in our child's brain. Whether your child has attention deficit or not, their brain still regulates their behavior, and many of these same things may be going on with your child. Certainly, biological causes need to be considered as we're examining our children's behavior. But that's not the only thing we want to consider, because there are other causes of children's misbehavior and inability to carry on life in a helpful way. Another category of causes has to do with character weaknesses. They also affect a child's ability to deal with their own behavior. Some children have weaknesses which aren't just behavioral, but they have to do with something deeper than that, something to do with the heart or with character. Things like laziness, or irresponsibility, or selfishness, or thoughtlessness, or impulsiveness, all of those are character qualities that influence a child's behavior. Some children are compulsive when it comes to cleanliness. Others are fearful of disease or darkness. Others are explosive emotionally and really need to learn the character quality of self-control. These are often character issues which reveal themselves in children's misbehavior. And if a child's suffering from a substantial weakness in a character quality, they're going to be a challenge to parent. It's interesting that the sin nature reveals itself in many creative ways in people's lives. Just look in the Bible, for example. I think the Apostle Peter had ADD. His problem was impulsivity, lying, without even thinking. They said, "Are you one of his disciples?" "Oh, no, I'm not one of those." Without even thinking, he's lying. Is the problem dishonesty? Maybe. Probably a greater problem, just being impulsive. He also was engaging in reckless behavior. Would you let your kid get out of a boat in a storm and try to walk on the water? Unlikely. Or wouldn't you be afraid to watch your son swinging a sword so close to someone's head that he cuts off his ear? I mean, the impulsivity of Peter illustrates that he probably had a problem with attention deficit. He was the original Mr. Whoops. When it comes to the sin nature, people can become very creative. One person may have a problem with honesty, another materialism, another person with bitterness and resentment. God is interested in changing hearts, not just behavior. Helping children develop healthier character is part of the solution, but for now, we're going to come back to talking about it as part of the solution later on in this workshop, but for now we're talking about how it is one of the causes of the problem behavior that we see in our children. So when children are challenged to parent, there may be some biological issues that are being dealt with, certainly, but also we want to examine some character issues that can also be part of the cause of the problem as well.
Another part of the problem of challenging children may be poor behavior models and lack of training up to this point. It isn't always the case, but some parents will admit that they see the same problems in their children that they experience, and they just let them go. And what the parent does in moderation, the child does in excess. So these behaviors get out of control. Sometimes the parent doesn't give the adequate training to the child when they're young. They figure, well, the child's going to outgrow these things. We don't really need to address them. It's just a part of their being a child. Things like whining, complaining, anger, selfishness. If not addressed when the child is young, they just get worse. But often the parents will make the mistake of thinking the child is just going to outgrow these things. So the problem just gets worse. These children haven't received the training they need at a younger age, and the result is a more complicated behavior problem as the child continues to grow.
Well, these are just a few of the causes of some of the challenged behavior that we see in our children. I'd say that we have our hands full in addressing some of these issues today, and we're going to spend some time looking at solutions. But let me just say one more thing about causes. As you evaluate the things that we've been saying, maybe you're saying to yourself, yes, I can see that's one of the causes for my child's problems. And that's great. If that's helpful for you, we find that to be very helpful for parents at times. On the other hand, maybe you look at your child and say, I have no idea what's causing this behavior. We want to say that knowing the cause is not all that important. If you can identify the symptoms, we can help you with a treatment. But it is helpful at times for us to understand the underlying causes, the reasons behind our children's behavior. It gives us a sense of peace sometimes because we're asking that question, what is wrong with my kid? And if we know now that some of these things have reasons, we can explain what's going on behind the problem, why we're coming to this problem with our child, then we can have this certain sense of peace and we can approach the solution with a little less anxiety as we go into it.
Now, some people may ask the question, is this problem genetic? There's been some studies showing that children who have a problem with ADD also have a parent or a sibling or another relative that also has ADD, and that might indicate some hereditary sense. So that's one concern that people have. People may also ask, well, isn't this really just an environmental problem? It's the parenting they've received, or it's something that's going on in their environment. Maybe it's an allergy, or it's diet, or something that's going on around them that's causing this behavior. Other people will say, well, it's just a chemical deficiency. That's really the only problem that we're dealing with. It's caused by this chemical deficiency. Other people may say, well, really it's a lack of skill development. If the child would just develop the skills they need, then that will solve the problem. Isn't it a skill deficiency? Now, we believe that the bottom line is yes to all of these things. That yes, it's genetic. Yes, it's affected by the environment the child is living in. Yes, there's chemical deficiencies. Yes, there's a lack of skill development that needs to be addressed. The bottom line is that the solution's the same for all these things. That this child needs training. They need teaching about character. They need teaching about their behavior. They need some retraining that goes on, some retraining of the heart.
This is the end of Side 2. For other resources of effective parenting, please call us at 1-800-771-8334. We would love to help make your parenting easier and more effective.